Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 21, episode 3 of
Der Daily Zeitgeist!
Yeah. For March 7th, 2018, my name is Jack O'Brien, aka Jack of all tirades. That's right, motherfuckers. That aka is courtesy of The Ironing is Delicious on Twitter. And I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
I got a few names for myself today because I was just thinking about Black Panther. Aka Wakanda Sykes, aka T'Challa Back Youngin. Woo woo! So those are just some homemade ones. And that's that.
And we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by the hilarious Brendan Small.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here.
AKA Donald Cock.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
I'm just trying, you know, everyone gets an AKA out here.
Yeah, that would be my, I guess I can't really admit to that at all, so I don't know what you're talking about.
All right, forget it.
Yeah.
Brendan, what is something from your search history that is revealing about who you are as a human being?
I guess lately, in the last year, if you were to look at my search history, I have been searching for ways to do practical effects for live action. And so if you look at my search history, you'll see that I've learned everything from YouTube. I mean, you can really learn anything you want to learn from YouTube. I've performed surgery on myself. I have taken my own teeth out. But I have euthanized anyway. So I just put out this short film called The Galacticon Nightmare, which is this whole thing that I wanted to learn how to do the – do you remember in Flash Gordon the ink – like the skies in that movie? They're all these very colorful skies that – anyway, what they do is they fill an aquarium full of different viscous liquids.
Oh, really?
And they light it in different ways and they film it. And I filmed it with anamorphic lenses. And I use that as skies and backgrounds. And what it gets – the whole idea is to not use any CG whatsoever.
Right,
it's part of like my Dogma 95. Instead of Dogma 95, it's Corman 82, Roger Corman 82. Anything Roger Corman can do, I can do. And that's the whole idea of this video. So you'll see that we built robots. We built spaceships. We shot them on green screens. We composited everything. We used these cool backgrounds. We built a cool space whale creature, which is something between like, you know, this crazy silicon – thing that we shot underwater. And anyway, so everything that I wanted to learn between my brother, Jeff Small, who is a makeup effects aficionado. He's been doing it for 15 years. So he and I partnered to make this whole thing with Funny or Die. You can go check it out at Funny or Die or go to galacticon.com and check it out too.
And so you had miniatures for your spaceships and all that, like
– I just noticed that there's something – somebody told me this. And I don't remember who to attribute this quote to, but basically CGI – looks very real, but we know it's fake.
Yeah.
You know, in every single movie, every huge, gigantic budget movie. But anytime we see actual practical effects, an actual thing that may have been a miniature or something,
right?
It looks maybe fake, but it feels real. We know it's tactile.
Right.
It does something to our subconscious.
Like feel the weight.
Exactly. Yeah. We know there's volume and density, and it refracts light in the real way because that's actual light hitting an object. So all those things hit our subconscious when we watch something. And so I wanted to experiment with that stuff, and I'm really, really happy with how it turned out. So when you check it out, you'll see that this looks like a huge, gigantic budget thing. I don't even want to tell people what I spent for this because I got the right lenses. I got the right crew. I got a great DP, this guy Matt Sweeney. I got a great compositor, this guy Brian Weeder, and I got my brother and a great editing team. And then I also scored all this extra stuff in a John Carpenter style. So just check it out. It's really fun.
I love that because – that's like what I think with Christopher Nolan too. He has such a insistence on doing everything in camera, and that lends itself to sort of the magic of a lot of his films where he's really realized like everything has to be practical.
There's something to when you see Batman standing on a gigantic, huge building and the wind is blowing his cape, and you know that that's a person and it's a huge shot, a helicopter shot sweeping in. Something happens where you think that's Batman. That's the actual Batman on a building.
And
he's about to fly off of it.
Versus like Jell-O Spider-Man or something.
I mean, the stakes are very low when we like through CGI and all that stuff, we know that someone's just invulnerable and they can slip and dodge and
just standing on an apple crate in like a bright green room.
But there's something to it too when it's done well. But but this is a fun experiment in that. Check it out. That's part of it. So basically I took my comic book. I have a record called Galacticon. I have a comic book called Galacticon. And from the comic book, I took that and put it up on its feet. So you'll see robots, space whales, spaceships, and all kinds of crazy stuff. Anyway, that's all my Google searching has been me being
around
lunatic
this,
just researching this stuff.
Amazing.
Yeah. You're probably the most like prolific guest we've ever had on. Sorry. People who aren't familiar yeah. with your work, but like you, I mean, you've had TV shows. You have some of our favorite characters on Comedy Bang Bang, the TV show, on Comedy Bang Bang, the podcast. Yeah, Brendan is all over the place.
I was telling my girlfriend this morning. I was like, this is the first time I've been a fan of someone that's like come in. I mean, like I admire wow. many of the guests, but yo, like, no, I think because I'm up, so man. Like from
that's good and terrible.
No,
at
like
the same
from
time,
home
yeah.
movies and things like that, and yeah. just like even like when you would be on Aqua Teen, I'm like, yo, I think that's Brendan Small. Like I just have this thing, so yeah. it's very yeah. good to have you here.
Well, yeah. thank you guys. Thanks.
Miles
good to be here.
Always talks about your Australian accent.
I know.
My guy pride.
I know. I guess I'll stream some Hulu. I love Australia. And Australia's been very nice to me over the years, but it doesn't really even sound like an Australian accent. It's somewhere between South Africa and New Zealand yeah. and someplace.
You're
Australia.
On a ship from South Africa to New
yeah,
Zealand.
Yeah, I've been traveling over and over. I can't find my destination. Yeah.
Luckily, we have a good amount of people who listen to in Australia.
Yeah, from Australia.
So shout out to everybody in Oz.
So we'll hear from them.
Australia, good day.
What is something you think is underrated, Brendan?
Underrated. I love, if we're going to talk about movies and stuff like that, I think original scripts are underrated. I think right. original new ideas. Anytime I see a movie that may not be like a top tier movie, I give him so many points for being original, for having a new character, for having something new to look at, to have a new ideology, philosophy,
yeah.
or just a new, you know, a new take on the human condition. That to me, I think is underrated in a world of, you know, lots of things that are kind of, you know, safe bets, high right. Q ratings equal an audience. So because we recognize this, we'll go see that movie. And it's true. It does make a lot of money, but why do we go to the movies in the first place? To connect, to feel something, yeah. to escape maybe, yeah. or to confront. So, you know, that's the kind of stuff I really applaud when it's original. So I don't know. Maybe that's underrated originality.
Yeah. I personally go to the movies to compare and contrast different versions of Tomb Raider. I'm always curious about the different visions of that. Talking about practical effects, something that I learned from an effects house in Los Angeles that we mm-hmm. interviewed back when I worked at Cracked was that practical effects people, you know, everybody thinks CG was like first came on the scene with Jurassic Park and they associate Jurassic Park with all CGI.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of that is practical effects kind of combined with CGI.
Yeah.
And
it's a really great balance because yeah, you do see a sleeping.
They nailed it.
What is it, like a stegosaurus or something like on
right.
the ground?
Or
there's a triceratops, that's what it is.
Right.
And it's sleeping. You can actually see its chest rise and
right.
fall.
Yeah.
And that's a real actual practical thing. And,
yeah, they
and
that, built that.
I think – I mean, I'm interested to see what Spielberg does with Ready Player One. By the way, I will watch everything over and over again by Spielberg.
Yeah.
You cannot do wrong.
Oh, for sure.
I think this shit was real too in Jurassic Park.
I think it was
yeah,
real dinosaur
poop.
Shit.
Yeah.
yeah.
Okay. That was Steven Spielberg's shit.
Yeah. He's just collected it over
collected.
Time.
That was my big question, though, because with those dinosaurs, they had to be eating so much. Like, there just had to be barges of dinosaur shit. Just, like, leaving that island daily.
That's probably true. Yeah. What? How did that?
That's a spinoff film.
That's like a Rosencrantz and Guildensterner right. dead of the Jurassic Park world.
Right.
Yeah.
Brendan, what's something that's overrated?
Facebook.
Yeah. Enough said.
I don't know. I mean.
Yeah. I don't use it.
I think it's a really. What it does is it makes people just feel bad about themselves all the time because everyone's kind of looking at the grass is greener constantly.
Yeah.
And I think it just makes people feel like hell. I think people come home and they go, they have that. How come I don't
right,
have that?
Right.
Why are they doing this and I'm not doing this? And so everyone's in a complacent place constantly. And I also think it's a surrogate for friendship. And I think that's a tricky and dangerous thing, too. I think people are more isolated than ever right now. And
right.
they shouldn't be because even though we like to think that we're good by ourselves,
right.
we're like, oh, I can take it. I'm Batman. I can stand on the top of a thing and be right. by myself. We're pack animals and we're at yeah. our absolute best when we're working together on something. If we're like a group of people doing the same thing, we're like we get high. We get some kind of great feeling.
Yeah. yeah.
Because we're all working together on something. And when we're isolated, pretending to have friends, kind of checking in here
yeah.
and there, we are communicating a little bit, but but you're looking at your friend count, you're looking at all this different stuff. I think it's a very dangerous thing, and I think it's the illusion of friendship. It's the illusion of contact, but it doesn't really make up for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that you can pinpoint that and just kind of look at destructive things that are happening in our society right now. And I do think Facebook may be part of it.
Oh, absolutely.
If we didn't have Facebook, we had to just be around each other, we would be a different society.
100%. Yeah.
I mean, it's annoying to be around people at the same time. So that contradicts everything.
That's why when people say like, well, I sent you a message on Facebook, I'm like, I live in the real world. You have my phone number. You can call me.
Well, that's equally annoying.
And I will pick up. Well, I just don't look at Facebook.
I live in meat space, bro. No, yeah, I agree. I've actually, because I was working and Facebook was always a work thing, I never totally got into it. But I think you're right that there is a broader consequence of that. There's a great article called The Poison We Pick in New York Magazine this week, I think, that kind of talks about the opioid crisis in relation to this kind of deep loneliness in that our current version of capitalism has engendered. And they talk about this study that was done where they put rats in individual cages and gave them access to opioids, and then they put them in a place where they could sort of exercise and interact with other rats. And they just chose not to do the drugs when they had the opportunity to interact with other creatures like themselves, whereas the ones who were in the cages just did it until they died. And I mean, that's basically
the whole thing. Makes it. I think we have an incredibly lonely president.
Oh yeah.
Oh my god. Yeah.
Can you imagine how isolated and how lonely his life is right now?
Well, yeah. No, like all people who are close to him have been filing out, and he's sort of left. He's whittled down to nothing.
He is down to zero.
His kids.
I mean, imagine just the psychosis involved with just having nothing, and the kids, which are kind of like he's in the position of where he has to push them out too.
Right.
Right.
So just imagine your daily life. You're the most powerful person in the world, and you have not one person that you can trust or talk to. And or those people around you are just yesing you to death.
Yeah.
Right. And you know when someone's kissing your ass, and
I don't know if he does.
But maybe he doesn't. Maybe he could very well not, but I do think this is part of the Facebook, Twitter, all that stuff, right. That's what I think is it's overrated. And I think if every time I hear about Facebook fucking up and maybe going away, I get kind of excited.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because, like in that loneliness, right? Same with social media. Like you may post something that you think will get likes to sort of validate yourself. And in the same way, like he uses Twitter to just cause a huge fucking uproar. That's like his way of saying like, oh, there's my feedback, or there's my like, there's me interacting. And like, oh, now I can sort of kick the can down the road and just stay in my room for executive time.
Yeah, there's behind the scenes reports that he gets itchy when he's not in the headlines for
I
could
see that. But this is again something that wouldn't have happened 10, 20 years ago. No one needs to hear from me. That's what I'd have to say too. Nobody need. I mean, I'm out there just. I'm basically a salesperson, just going, "Hey, I've got this for sale. I've got this for sale.
Right.
I hope you like it."
Peddling your wares.
Exactly. That's all I'm really doing on Instagram and Twitter. And then every once in a while, I'll tweet a joke or something like that. But that's very rare. You don't need to hear from me.
Right, right.
You don't need to get – you don't – just enjoy the stuff I put out. You don't even know who I – you shouldn't know who I am.
Right, right. Yeah, it's fucking me up even seeing you, Brendan. So I'm just like – I don't know if I'm enjoying this.
I know, but yeah, exactly. But I mean, you really shouldn't be checking in on people like me at all. That's what I think.
Except
I
don't need the daily zeitgeist.
I don't. Yeah, but I don't need to hear like I love Arnold Schwarzenegger. I don't need to know what he's saying every day.
Yeah.
I don't need to look at him every day. I don't need to look at Donald Trump ever. But I mean, I really don't need to look at him and watch him melt down constantly.
Right.
Although every story I hear about Arnold Schwarzenegger just makes me like him more, like as a person.
Because he's just aggressive asshole.
Aggressive, like. Yeah, just like a gym teacher.
I don't know why I picked
Arnold
Schwarzenegger, to be honest. I don't know. Yeah.
Great video, guys. Just search Arnold Schwarzenegger Brazil on YouTube. Oh, and check out that fucking sex creme out there.
What?
Dude, he is like in Brazil in the 70s.
I know that one.
Yeah, doesn't understand boundaries or that he's making this woman so uncomfortable.
Interesting. Yeah, I think I know that video.
Terrifying.
Yeah. All right, so I don't advocate that. Okay.
All right. We're trying to take a sample of what people are thinking and talking about right now, today, at the moment that we record it. And the way we like to open up is by asking our guest, what is a myth? What's something that people out there think is true? That you know to be false based on your personal experience.
Oh, geez. Oh, man. Help me out here, guys. I don't know.
Anything with guitars? I mean, oh, you're okay. Yeah.
Oh, I know. I mean, look, I'm a guitar guy, so I've got I'm kind of straddling the line between music and comedy entertainment stuff, and I definitely want to keep one foot planted forever in the guitar and music world. But a lot of people are players, and it's funny, if you're a guitar player, you're a guitar teacher.
Right.
Whether or not you want to be, you're going to show your friend down the street a cool lick or a riff or how to play Iron Man or something cool.
Right, right.
Which is how I learned how to play guitar, was by my friend down the street showing me how to play Iron Man. but there are a lot of different myths.
One of the myths about guitars that I learned – so you have a regular show called Baked that super producer Anna Hosnier works on with you.
With Steve Agee, yeah.
With Steve Agee. And, I came to that show and – you and another gentleman whose name I'm drawing a blank on, who's apparently a guitar god.
Oh, Mike Keneally?
Mike Keneally,
yeah.
Like, you guys are both just incredible guitarists, but you don't look like guitarists. Like,
we look like...
You look like normal people.
Because he was in Death Clock with me when we were touring, so we would just get mistaken for the band accountants. because none of us, I mean, except
what are you doing with that artist pass?
Bass player and drummer look like cool, badass rock and roll guys, and me and Mike look like the kind of guy that we look like, we're going to take your ticket at the booth.
Right.
So,
yeah, Mike looks like a little like Leonard Maltin.
Zach Galifianakis called him. Right. Mike Keneally, if you haven't checked him out, check out his stuff. He is a monster in every possible way of musicianship, and he's a funny, nice, great guy.
Yeah.
And so is everybody in the Baked band, but he just got off a tour with Joe Satriani, where most of the Baked band is now part of Joe Satriani's band. So Joe Travers just toured with Satriani. Brian Beller, who plays with me in Death Clock and Galacticon, is in the Satriani band. So it's funny. We share a rhythm section. Our comedy show shares a rhythm section, which seems like, why would Joe Satriani pick a comedy rhythm section? Because
solid band, yeah.
I use a term often. They're super musicians. They can do stuff that nobody else can do.
Right.
And they can do it while they're drinking a cup of coffee and just do it with one hand.
Right.
They're insane. Yeah. So also in our band is Walter Eno, who's kind of like a Mike Keneally on his own. And he has done tons of shows with us. And he's a monster player, guitarist and keyboard player.
Yeah.
And singer. He can do anything. He's a human jukebox.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get into the stories of the day, you guys, because there's a lot of stories to catch up on, and we're just going to go through them pretty quickly up top. Jeff Sessions, the continuing WWE-ification of politics, Sessions went to Sacramento and said he was going to sue California over sanctuary cities, and then the governor of California fired back with a tweet, and it's just all like, yeah, I'm coming for
They're
you,
like,
California.
Sad.
Yeah.
You ain't gonna do shit.
Like, right.
It's crazy. It's a stunt,
right?
Because he's basically trying to, it's over these three laws that California passed in the wake of Trump's election, basically saying, like, we're not going to tell our police to enforce immigration laws. Like, they're police. They're here to enforce, like actual laws and keep criminals off the street. So, again, it seems like just a political stunt. We'll see what happens. I think this case is a little bit – it might be harder for them to win because, typically states will sue the DOJ over shit. And with them trying to, sort of prove that these laws are, preventing ICE from doing shit – it might be a little bit harder because they're already in California doing raids. So they're going to be like, what's the problem? Like, what are you trying to say? Just because we're, I guess, defying you, they want to sue and make it about that. But yeah.
I wish that Sessions and Trump would commit to hating each other and doing the opposite of one another's agenda or something.
Yeah.
I just wish – I'm confused by their – maybe it's because I'm a writer. I just want one simple story.
right,
what I mean? Like, oh, this is confusing. You don't want any of this. You want that. Oh, he's calling him like what's he calling him? Captain Crunch or some kind of stupid. So, he means well the what did
Keebler,
he? Oh, Mr. Magoo.
Yeah,
he's calling him Mr. Magoo.
Yeah, yeah.
Which isn't even very good. I mean, that shows really he doesn't.
Well, Mr. Magoo did even though he was bumbling, he did solve all the crimes.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So, but he was old and myopic and couldn't see and all that stuff. But I wish that and Sessions feels like he's falling in line with Trump's ultimate plan.
Well,
Sessions
is he always wanted to get rid of immigrants, so I think this is pretty normal for
him. This is his own agenda, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's interesting thinking about it from a writer's perspective because, I mean, this is a type of propaganda that Putin and the Kremlin, the current sort of regime in Russia, perfected where it's just like they put – there's like shifting realities where you're never like on a firm standing. Right. And like so they'll be friends. They'll say they're friends. They'll say they hate each other. And like you just don't know where you stand at any time. And like five different things are true at any given moment. And it just makes it really difficult to, you know, attack any set of ideas.
Well, I'll tell you, if I see a movie that's this murky and the characters are this kind of poorly drawn, I turn it off, but I can't turn this
off. Yeah.
You know, there's no way for me to turn this off. It just keeps happening. And it's a terrible, stupid, shitty story.
Mm-hmm. Right. So there, the first primaries of the election season happened yesterday in Texas.
Yeah.
Miles, what did we learn?
Well, we learned that Texas is poised to send two Latinas to Congress for the first time.
Boo. Oh, no, that's good, right?
That is good. Whoa, come on, buddy. That's the other podcast you do.
Right.
The Daily Stormer. So it seems a little bit late considering the demographics in Texas, but either way, Veronica Escobar and Sylvia Garcia are on their way, and the only reason we assume this is a foregone conclusion is because how solidly blue their districts are that they're running in. So
they are in one of the very few.
Yeah. And also Beto O'Rourke, you know, he got the nomination for the Democrats to run against Ted Cruz. And one of the really interesting things was the turnout was like historic in Texas for Democrats. Like I think in 2014, there was something like 600,000 Democrats showed up. This go around, it was like something just over a million.
Right.
So that's a huge indication that, yeah. But however, the Republicans, there were like, I think 1.5 million Republicans came out to vote. But that's just a function of them, there being more registered Republicans than Democrats in the state. And nonetheless, feels like a little bit of
the Republicans are emphasizing this. Fox News is running with this story more than any other outlet I saw that the Democrats are coming out in full force because I think they understand what the mainstream media didn't understand ahead of the 2016 election, that the more you cover how strong the other side is coming, the more people will be motivated to get out and actually vote.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're seeing the conservative media make a huge deal about the Democrats actually coming out. But, you know, the Republicans came out in massive numbers as well. And it's probably not going to happen for the Democrats in Texas. It is just a sign that there is a blue wave, that they are so much
something
the numbers
water.
Were stronger than they have been previously.
Yeah. And the one fun thing was, you know, as Ted Cruz and Beto O'Rourke, you know, that now we know that's going to be the Senate showdown. Ted Cruz released his dumbass country song to like flame Beto O'Rourke. And Brendan, you'll have to listen to
it. I have to hear this.
Just critique this composition from the Ted Cruz campaign.
If you're going to run in Texas, you can't be a liberal man, cause liberal thought is not the spirit of a Lone Star Man.
Man and man.
Yeah.
Gotta be Texas and honest about your plans. If you're gonna run in Texas, you can't be a liberal man. Stories, liberal Robert wanted to fit in.
Liberal.
So he changed his name to Beto and hit it with a grin. Beto wants those open borders and he wants to take our guns. Not a chance on earth he'll get a vote from millions of Texans.
If you're Texans
in Texas, you can't be a liberal man.
I'm Ted Cruz, and I approve this.
I'm Ted Cruz, and I approve this message, man.
So he's trying to flame Beto O'Rourke because his name's Robert O'Rourke. He's Irish,
right?
But he's also fluent in Spanish. But he's been called Beto like his whole life.
Okay,
and Ted Cruz is trying to be like he changed his name. Blah. I don't know what
to,
he's
like
trying
appeal to.
I guess
Latino.
I'm not.
People.
Maybe that's what he's trying to say. But also remember, Ted Cruz, your real name is Raphael Edward Cruz.
Right,
so
and you're Canadian, so
I don't know. I don't think that's a good song. I don't think it is. I don't think it's I think those chords have been a little overused. I don't think they're going to grab your ear too much. And furthermore, I think it's just too many syllables per stanza.
Right. Yeah, there were they were,
you know what I mean?
Shoehorning in a few things.
They were really shoehorning.
Libretto named Robert.
I was like, whoa, Libo, whoa, who, what? What?
The only one that can really put that many syllables into a song is like John Popper from Blues Traveler.
Like
saying that kind of a stuff, you know. That's just too much stuff, and liberal is just not a good word. They should have changed it to libtard. They should have changed it to like two syllable liberal, and they're trying to make it a. It's a three syllable word. They're trying to make a two syllable.
Yeah, liberal.
And yeah, also, liberal. Yeah.
And just the messaging seems like I don't know what it's accomplishing because it's just telling us what the conventional wisdom is. It's like you'll never beat us. You're a Democrat, and they don't win in Texas. It's like, yeah, that's the conventional wisdom, and we're trying to upset that. But like, I don't know. It didn't seem like an effective way to like frame the race from their perspective. Yeah.
You're not going to get a stadium of people singing along with this song.
No.
Right. It's not going to work. That you got to shorten
it. Yeah, you could probably pay about 20 plants at a rally to do it, and then like people would be like, oh.
But still, they would have to have like notes, and they'd be looking at their iPhone. Singing along, it just wouldn't
work.
Someone
need like the pitch pipe to make sure you're on key first.
Come on, guys, let's try it one more time. We did 32 takes already.
Liberal man, you see, God, you fucked that part up, Eric.
All right,
yeah. And guitar playing wise, it's not bad.
All right, we're gonna take a quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back. And Brendan, you were saying that you actually have some context to critique a jingle like that, right?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. When I was in my last year of music school, I interned. It was my first kind of professional job, but it was an internship at two different jingle houses in New York. So I was going to school at Berklee College of Music, and I traveled to I lived in Queens for a summer. And I went to two different places. And one of the houses, Michael Levine Music, who's probably still around. He did the Give Me a Break Kit Kat theme.
Oh,
and I would
damn.
Get him. I'd get him coffee and I'd wind cables.
Yeah. Wow.
And he was a great violinist too. And he was just really top notch musician. And then there was another house I worked at, David Horowitz Music Associates, who I don't know is, they must still be around. All these guys, it was really a fantastic place to watch. This would not have passed muster.
Oh,
I don't
no.
think this thing would have.
They're like, no, this is.
Yeah, any ad agency would have said, this is not a clean message.
Well, that's because you're in New York City, my man.
That's right.
Texas, we do shit different.
Yeah.
That's right.
We're cramming
right.
a whole bunch of words.
Like mediocre jingles.
Right. Yeah. Is there any sort of conventional wisdom or like some smart thing that you learned from the Kit Kat guy or anyone you worked with?
Yeah, I learned like in the first day, I don't want to work in post-production. Even though I thought, you know, I really like that these guys have to write music immediately.
Right.
They
right.
get a call, they're bidding on something, and they go until they can get it. And so I thought that was cool. Having a bag of tricks, being able to write music quickly, I thought was important. But yeah, I also learned that I want to be the director and I want to be the writer and I also want to write the music.
I mean, jingle writing is – some prolific people have started off as jingle writers too. Like didn't Barry Manilow did a bunch of jingles?
I don't know that he started as –
You know what's funny about –
Lou Reed started as a jingle writer.
Did he?
Barry Manilow didn't write the song. I write the songs.
Yeah, that's
Do you know
right.
that? That's, wow. that's an interesting thing.
That feels
thing.
Like a betrayal.
Yeah. I know. I think like Neil Diamond probably did some stuff. I don't know. There are a whole bunch of people, but it's a real technique and those people really are good at it. You know, so – it doesn't happen as often. You don't hear like a jingle for a song.
Yeah, yeah.
Except for Ted Cruz. And by the way, Texas is the home of Austin with amazing musicians. Why don't you get those guys to help you?
I think it's too
Maybe it's too blue.
Too blue
liberal.
There, yeah.
Too liberal.
Yeah.
So we wanted to talk about MoviePass, you guys. MoviePass is the sort of going to the movies version of Netflix where you have to put on pants to enjoy it.
Nah.
Basically, you pay a monthly fee and you get to go to as many movies as you want at like basically national chain theaters. And, you know, I've heard from a lot of people that they, you know, use the shit out of this thing and like can't figure out how MoviePass is making money because it like. What is the cost of it? It's like really.
It's like a hundred and something bucks for a full year. It's
for
like maybe $150 for like
right.
a full year of nonstop movies.
So that's like seeing one movie at the Arclight.
Right.
Yeah.
In Hollywood.
Exactly.
Right.
By the way, I'm a card carrying member of MoviePass.
Of MoviePass.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was given to me as a gift by my wife. And That's like a great gift for me. But the way I look at it right now is it feels like Spotify to me, where it's great for the audience and not great for the artist.
Well, right. Cause everyone's like, what's the model? Because it's MoviePass that reimburses the theater, correct? Like when you use.
Right. So it's basically, they buy the tickets for you. Like, so
so AMC will be like, hey, we got, 500 MoviePass users. You need to pay up for these tickets. And then they cut the check basically.
Right. Exactly.
So yeah, that seems like a not great business model.
Yeah, I mean, it's $6.95 a month. That's less than going to a single movie. So the only way it would make sense is if people bought the pass and then didn't go to any movies for right. them from a financial perspective, or so it would seem. But they have recently come out and announced where they're actually making their money. And it's where a lot of these applications make their money.
Popcorn.
Basically, yeah. No, they watch where you go. They're watching you the whole time that you have your application on, have their application on your phone. So they just take in all this data about where they know where you live.
Because you have to send you the card. Right.
Leave from there to go to the movies. They know where you eat before the movies. They know everything about what you do surrounding the movies. And essentially the idea is that they're going to be able to sell your data or, package that data in order to cut deals with Chipotle. Like they know right. that. For whatever reason,
which this isn't new. I mean,
Franco movies do well with people who go to Chipotle or some shit.
Fuck
and
yeah, they do.
Yeah, this isn't new at all. You're right.
Yeah. This is what Amazon. So I remember a guitar company that asked me to support one of their games or something like that said, hey, we want you to endorse this thing. And I said, why do you want me to endorse? And they said, well, we saw who bought the first version of this game. And we got to look at all of the R&D and all the info from Amazon or something like that. And their number one favorite show, 99% of these people, their number one favorite show is Metalocalypse.
Oh, wow.
So if you endorse this, and I was like, what's the thing? And I believed in it. I thought it was a cool guitar learning thing. And it engages you and gets you up on your feet and playing guitar. So that's how they found that out.
Wow. Yeah, it's true.
Like backhanded research channels and stuff like that. I guess, apparently it's all legal. It's all fine. But it's been going on for a long time.
And I think movies are a key sort of real like meat space purchase that a lot of young people make. And so that's probably why it's so valuable is because, it's a very typical date thing. So, it's a thing that Amazon can't quite get its hands on because they're, not selling movie tickets. And so that's, I think, why they think this is so valuable. The CEO, Mitch Lowe, who was a co-founding executive of Netflix, made a presentation called Data is the New Oil. How will MoviePass monetize it?
Oh, wow.
And basically explained like all these different ways that he's going to be spying on you through his application.
Not spying, just collecting usable marketing data.
Right.
Come on.
Right. Yeah,
it's not spying. It'll scare people out there.
Look, I really want – I love going to the – to me – some people get massages, some people go to church. I like to be in a movie theater.
People get massages, some people go to church. I like to move theater.
I think it's the same thing. It's like some kind of a release. Right. Belief system or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But
that's
me being in a dark theater, it's my favorite place in the world to be. I don't care what I'm watching. I'm going there to be in this dark room to watch a flickering light.
Do you go solo?
Popcorn. I will. I have no problem.
I prefer solo.
Yeah, I used to work in it. That was my first job back in Boston when I was in music school. I worked at the Sony Copley Lowe's Theater, and I was a ticket taker, usher, and seriously, one of my top five jobs of all time. And I've gotten to do some pretty cool stuff.
Yeah,
being a movie
cool
usher,
jobs.
To me, I loved carrying canisters of film up and downstairs.
Oh, right.
And that's what made me think, I'm a musician. What am I doing? All I do is talk about movies. All I do is hang out in a movie theater and hang out with people at a different college that are studying movies. I got to do that. But I think this is a tricky thing. I don't know how this is going to work out because I hope it makes people go to movies, but I don't think it's going to – it seems like no one's going to make money off that. And that's the same Spotify thing. So I know that as Spotify gets more popular, I see record sales not do as great for not only myself but my favorite band. So if you're not selling records, you're getting nickel and you're like getting like hay pennies on the dollar,
Right.
And it makes me think, look, if people aren't buying records, why are we going to make them? So what's the point? Is it all just going to be TV, Netflix stuff? I get less excited when I see a movie premiere on Netflix than in a theater, too.
Yeah.
I wanted to see the Noah Baumbach movie in a theater, not on Netflix. Yeah. I liked it, but I wanted to see that in a theater.
Right.
So I don't know. This, I think it's all kind of, I mean, maybe it's just changed. Maybe it's the natural evolution. I don't like it, though.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the way he's framing it, Lowe, the CEO, he's saying, we're just helping subscribers make a better decision about what they do surrounding when they go to movies. But sort of a shady thing that came out this past weekend. So Jennifer Lawrence had a movie come out called Red Sparrow, where she played like a Russian spy, her first movie in which there was nudity, which was a big selling point, I'm told. It didn't do very well. And something that came out after the fact is that MoviePass actually blocked it from a lot of their markets.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
They said that they were like, this movie is blacked out for your market, essentially.
MoviePass's decision.
Yeah, that's MoviePass's decision. Okay. And they basically said, this is something we do every once in a while to better understand member behavior. But essentially, it's like they decided not to play ball with us and decided not to like spend with MoviePass. And so they don't get like people going to their movie.
It's a way of like, yeah, they're flexing their muscle and kind of making a veiled threat of sort of like,
right,
hey, guess what? Like, we should engage in some kind of business transactions, or, you know, we could also just fucking tank your movies through the
They also could have known this movie's probably not going to do that well, so this will be a good thing for us to be able to say, hey, we flexed on Red Sparrow and it
maybe you're tanked. Right. Maybe you're right. Yeah. But also, I would say there are probably two reasons. Maybe that's half of the reason. The other half is, I think, people are going to learn to lean towards more escapism. If they're looking at a movie that's kind of mirroring what's happening right now with Russians and spies and all that stuff, maybe you just like, I can't take any more of this.
Straight up murking people in public.
I think that's the way that you'd market it. It's like, hey, this is happening. We made a movie about it, where people are like, I'm just going to stay away from that.
Yeah, right.
It could be that too. But yeah, if they are flexing muscle, then that's just ridiculous too.
Yeah. So, but I mean, who knows for sure? But it's clearly them saying like, well, we definitely control a good amount of moviegoer behavior. So,
well, it's the same thing with Blockbuster back in the old days with videos. They were able to censor stuff.
Yeah. They edited out sex scenes and
they edited in sex scenes.
Right.
All right. And then finally, we have a story about a app that has been developed for sexual consent called a Legal Fling.
Oh, good.
Very clearly designed by people whose only experience with sex was through a video game. It involves basically you have all these preferences and different things that you can mark off with regards to a specific sexual encounter. So you consent to, okay, I consent to have sex with you, and then I can change that later if things like don't go well. But it's very much like just a thing that nobody has ever or would ever use.
It's
like
the exact same fucking thing as that Chappelle Show skit, The Love Contract,
right?
With Rashida Jones when they're in bed, and he's like, "And initial here for oral."
Right.
And he's like, I'll do it too. Because in this thing,
so
too,
funny.
You can, there are certain things like,
yeah, specific
certain,
sex acts.
Certain parameters like condom use, bondage, dirty talk, sexting. So you can set hilarious. Your boundaries before. It's like,
you know, I did an episode of Metalocalypse about that too, where, I mean, it's part of the music world is, you get backstage and you meet with a band, you know? So we had a thing called the paternity waiver, where if you want to get backstage, in order to get backstage, you have to waive all rights. All rights. So that, and then there's a death waiver too. If you get into by buying a ticket, you automatically will release all like legal obligation, whatever.
Anything can happen.
And then furthermore, there's a paternity waiver. So one of the characters has like 100 kids that look exactly like him, different women all around the world. And there's no legal contract. There's no obligation. They've waived all those rights.
That's awesome.
That's what that feels like.
Right.
And I didn't see Chappelle's thing, but no, it sounds like it's the exact same thing.
Pretty much the exact thing. When I was reading this, I was like, wait, this is literally, it's just the exact same thing, except the 2018 version, and it's in an app.
It just seems like such a misunderstanding of, I don't know,
sexual behavior. Yeah. It's such a gray, murky area that
there's also the potential for people to abuse the app too. Like, you could coerce someone to be like, I want you to put this, this, and this here. And then you can use that as sort of some kind of defense of like, well, we had agreed that this was it.
Right.
But who knows the circumstances under which the agreement is, yeah, you know, how you come to the agreement.
You totally lose the ability to change your mind after
Well, you can. That's the thing is like you can live track and make edits to the content. It's just so complicated. I mean, I mean, hats off to people for trying to figure out how we can, you know, improve our society. But I don't know if this is the way to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm confused. Yeah. I'm very confused. I have a lot of things I could say that I would think would just put me in a fucked up hole where I don't even mean any of the things. Just trying to rationalize what's happening behind
right.
that.
Yeah. It's
engaging with the same or opposite sex in a sexual way is it exposes a part of you that you don't. You just want to like get to the act. The hard part to do is to have a conversation about it beforehand, and this is eliminating that part, the intimacy part of even going. Hey, what are you comfortable with?
Open up legal fling and okay.
Yeah, exactly.
oh, okay.
Let's get our phones out and let's sync. Okay, yeah. All right. I see you.
It's
you
mediating
see me.
That. Yeah.
But I mean, people should talk to each other.
That's what we need. Is we need to be speaking about these things, humans
and like
human,
you know, and have a clear intent. Yeah. Like, you know, just say it. And if you're not into it, fine. Ask and move on.
We need to be able to change culture that people can speak openly and not have to, you know.
This is like more stuff where you hide behind your computer instead of engaging.
Yeah.
Right.
You know.
And I mean,
verbally or, you know,
with Facebook, you know, you had a guy who wasn't necessarily great at making friends, like creating a way for other people to, you know, legislate the friending process.
Exactly.
And, this seems like a sort of an almost satirical version of that design.
It seems
for
like
a, sex.
Yeah, it seems like a subplot in Silicon Valley.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess it's like for the person developing is like rather than addressing the problem of male coercion, let's just make an app and let that do the hard work rather than being a little more introspective or having difficult conversations about it.
Right.
Exactly.
All right. We're going to take another break and then we'll be right back. And we're back and we are thrilled to be joined by super producer Anna Hosnier.
Oh, there's the steel door swinging in. You rang.
Hello.
Hey, Anna. How are you?
Hi. Thanks
Welcome.
For having me.
Welcome to the Daily Zeitgeist. So you came on Monday and told us about what was supposed to be the Bachelor finale that didn't end up being the actual finale because...
Jack, that was yesterday.
That was yesterday.
That was Tuesday.
He's time traveling.
Yes.
Excuse him.
Oh, here we go with that whole, I just had a baby. Okay. Yes, as you guys all don't know, I produce a podcast about The Bachelor.
And it's called...
Will You Accept This Rose?
And it's hosted by...
Arden Marine and Aaron Foley.
And it's on... Not on this network. Right. Anyway, but go
Remind
on.
Remind me never to have her on. It's all just these plugs. God damn.
I'm all plugs.
You're all plugs.
All plugs all the time. But so what happened?
So last night was the 2 hour after the final rose because they just won't let us go.
Right. He dumped the girl he was supposed to be engaged to.
So he dumped the girl, Becca, that he picked, he originally proposed to on Monday night in the finale.
Right.
And because that had to take about a year to show on television, that was a 3 hour finale. Like I said yesterday, I had to be put to bed afterward because I was so emotionally exhausted.
That is longer
exhausted.
Than The Godfather, just
yeah.
so you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So last night was a 2 hour after the rose where the girl that he
after,
dumped.
After the rose, right?
Yeah, Jesus. Right. I'm about to have like PTSD flashbacks.
Can I ask you a question? Has he ever offered a stem?
Well, actually, funnily enough, here we go. He gave her the rose, and then when she jumped to hug him, the top of the rose fell off from the original proposal, which is...
That's how you knew.
I knew immediately. I was like,
really?
Well,
I was joking, but that's really
well.
Funny. So the metaphor, crumbling flowers before
She ended
your
up
face.
With just a stem.
And wow. She was the likable one, right? And... Like, well, she was the one who had a personality, and he dumped
yes,
her
Lauren
for...
Lauren B., the one he dumped her for...
just doesn't have a ton of personality.
She just doesn't say anything. A lot of what she says is, wow. And that's the... And then he says, I love that.
Wow.
And that is all their conversations. Right.
Wow, I love that. What?
She says... Wow. He tells her, like, wow. Look, they went on a date in Italy where he's like, look, I've seen cheese like that before.
What?
And she was like, wow. And he was like, yeah, I love that. And,
what?
And then they proceeded to be like,
nothing.
Just looking at each other.
Just nothing.
And then he fell in love so hard.
Right.
Yeah. So yesterday, did he propose to anyone again? Did
he proposed to Lauren B. at the live show at the end. After he talked to Becca,
and
they
Lauren
got
B.
some closure.
And Lauren B. is a DJ?
Just kidding. Not at all. Lauren B. is like a tech saleswoman or something.
Bodak Yellow?
Yeah. She is a small, petite, blonde woman who seems to come from Trump-supporting parents who does not say much.
Mm-hmm. So she gets the proposal this time.
So the show starts. They bring out Becca, who he dumped. She goes through all her feelings. Is like, this is so terrible. Chris Harrison has the nerve to be like, everyone's attacking me on Twitter, which is like, oh, go fuck
yourself. Chris Harrison's the host guy?
Yeah. Okay. It's like, nobody
cares.
He says
he's being attacked?
Yeah, he's like, I'm getting death threats, which everyone's like, yeah, you filmed a breakup. It's fucked up.
Oh, I see. So he filmed a breakup. Everyone's like, this is like the guy who filmed a suicide on YouTube. Right. Right, I get it.
Logan
okay.
Paul.
Yeah. So people are just like, how could you do that? And then he makes the girl that he dumped, Becca, justified that it was okay for them to film her.
Oh.
So you could she was like, yes, I understand that I went on this show, so I understand that really, it was, you know, I gave up my rights, so it had to be filmed. And it helped me get past it.
You knew what you signed up for, right?
Yeah. Right? Oh, they made her justify it so it could make Chris Harrison look better, but the whole situation was just
and
awkward.
And just came off like a hostage reading a letter, like in a video.
She's like, yes, I feel totally okay.
ISIS is treating me fine.
Yeah. And so...
I mean, that is the contract, though. You're entering into, like, you're having your personal relationship filmed at any given hour. Right. And they have – that's what the show – is that not the show?
Yeah.
And
it is. I mean
– and we'll commodify your trauma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And you agree basically the understanding is if you're in the final three, you will have sex with
you get to go to a
bachelor
fantasy suite. But you can turn it down. They usually don't because in America – you feel like that's almost like a currency in a relationship. So
right.
Like, don't you love me? I will sleep with you.
Right. And then a lot of the time he sleeps with them and then is like, I'm going to dump you.
Actually,
right?
Never mind.
One of them does get sent home after the fantasy.
Right. So they do terrible. Sign up for some humiliation.
Well, something I found very interesting watching Bachelor Winter Games where they had international contestants come in from all the international shows is a lot of the international people did not take the fantasy suite. Like, one woman from Russia literally said, I couldn't look my mother in the eye if I went to the fantasy suite with you after this.
Wait, her mother was inside of the fantasy suite?
Yes, her mother was there.
Are you serious?
Do you really want to come in here?
What a twisted
show. That's how they do it in Russia, man. That's how you consummate a relationship.
In America, we're all about winning at all costs. So it's like, look, if you got to fuck to get to that final fucking rose thing,
also,
then you fuck.
We learned that in Japan on The Bachelor, the furthest they go on TV is a hug. They don't even kiss. Like the final two will maybe kiss, but
I just shake hands with my mother.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm Japanese.
Anyway.
I see. I get it now. Okay.
Anyway, so they bring up Ari to talk to Becca after, you know, the breakup, and it's very
awkward.
Ari's our bachelor, and they have a weird, awkward, like, okay, conversation, which doesn't really go anywhere, and Ari just says everything is his fault, but then makes 100 excuses as to why it's not his fault, like, the pressure, which is just
So it's not his fault, essentially. Yeah.
Look, any bachelor that accepts to do this and is surrounded with a room of what, like 40 gorgeous women, he will
26.
26, okay. Let's say 26. That's a good amount of women.
Yeah.
Let's say 27 for the sake of this one.
And also, like the bachelorette, the same thing. They lose their minds.
Yeah.
You're no longer in your right mind when people, attractive people, are talking to you like you're a god.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
It's just crazy. So whatever he says, what is he saying at the very end? He says that.
Well, they all said you shouldn't have proposed if you were that unsure. And which he goes, I just felt so pressured. Like Chris Harrison was looking at me. Like people wanted it. I had to give them something. The ratings, baby. The ratings. It's basically what he said. But she was like, cool. Well, you're an adult man and you can make your own choices. And so then.
So she was still like mad and openly criticizing him during
She wasn't criticizing him. She said she forgave him. She was the whole season was very level-headed, and that's, I think, why people liked her so much. Also, they started a GoFundMe for her, like fans. She made up to like 6,000, which she donated to cancer research on the show, which I thought was very nice.
Wait, why a GoFundMe?
Because people were like, you know what? We're going to send her some money for being dumped on live TV. Go have a drink, honey. Go to Mexico.
Oh,
have
really?
A time of your life. Which she was like, I don't need that money.
Yeah, Puerto Rico still needs electricity and running water. Yeah. But anyway, let's send some money to this woman who needs it.
Doesn't the idea of just GoFundMe sound like a dismissive, kind of like angry thing? GoFundMe.
GoFundMe.
Hey, asshole. GoFundMe.
Yeah.
Kind of go do anything.
And then they brought on Lauren B. and Ari together. He proposed to her.
Right then and there?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so
stupid.
They
were like, we're having the time of our lives. And it was just so boring.
I love that.
Yeah, and then they left, and then they announced the new Bachelorette is going to be Becca.
Oh,
the girl he dumped. So,
oh, really?
And then they brought in a few Bachelors, like contestants to meet her to start the season off. And well, that was an interesting group of guys. One guy played banjo.
Hey, that's
and one guy brought a horse in, which I was like, you gotta stop bringing horses into the studio. They shit everywhere.
Wait, do they bring horses in a lot?
It's a thing that people will show up in horses. One girl showed up with a camel once. I don't know where
that's
she got
how you
it.
So
hold on.
Yeah, I'm Lebanese.
Is like, the horse one of the Bachelors?
Yes. Well, this whole guy is like, hey, I brought this horse because you always gotta get back up on the horse. Which I was like, take him out.
He's like not even a farmer. That he just brought it in for the metaphor.
I don't know. He was from like Wisconsin.
It'd be hilarious. Like he didn't even know how to ride it. It's purely for the metaphor. He's like, oh god,
that's the thing.
He's scared of horses.
He got bucked off the horse.
In The Bachelorette, I am so bewildered by how uncreative people are.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, like that is a funny joke.
Right.
Well, and then they were like, get up on the horse, and she's like, I'm wearing a dress, and then they just made her get up on the horse anyway.
Don't worry, we'll mosaic it out.
Yeah, but yeah.
Only these 1,000 people will see.
Yes.
Should be an interesting season. I really liked her. The most dramatic season yet.
Yeah,
what a year!
So, I didn't know such a boring human being could bring such a crazy show.
So the reason this was dramatic is he proposed, which is how the season usually ends.
Yes,
but they stuck with him through what usually also happens is after they propose and are engaged, they oftentimes will break up. They filmed the breakup, which came after the proposal, and then had another episode where he proposed to the other girl. So it was like a big twist-a-roo is why this is different than normal.
Usually people wait about 2 years to break up, because if you wait 2 years, you get to keep the ring, which is usually worth like $200,000.
Is that true?
Yes. If you don't...
specifically to The Bachelor?
So yeah.
Or in just real life?
On The Bachelor, yeah. Neil Lane shows up, as we call it, the corpse of Neil Lane shows up, because he looks like a wax figure at this point. And he's the jeweler, Neil Lane.
Oh, got it.
Infamous Neil Lane.
Okay.
He shows up like,
don't know anything
let
about that.
Me show you this jewelry. He's really creepy.
He is nothing famous in this room. We do not know him.
Sounds a bit like Smeagol presenting the ring.
He like comes out. We always joke that he's like a bat that like wakes up and like flies. And it's just like, let me give you a ring. And then.
But it's $200,000 and you can keep it?
If you last for 2 years.
Oh, hell yeah.
If you don't last that long, you got to give the ring back. But if you last
Has anybody
years...
ever, like, broken up the day before? Like, the guy was just like, this is not working out.
I don't think so. You can last one more. At least you keep it to yourself.
Mm.
Yeah, or you work together, like, look, I'm going to keep the ring. We'll split the money.
I mean, people will, like, die early for money. Like, there's a thing where, like, at a certain point, the tax break for, like, death and inheritance was wearing off. And so, like, all these people just died the day before that. So.
I mean, go watch Dateline. People murder each other daily for $25,000.
Right? Yeah. Well, $25,000. We're talking.
That's good money, man.
I know, but it's not $200,000. Anyway.
All right,
money
thank
bags.
Yeah.
I'm out here killing for $25,000.
Anna, thank you so much for filling us in on
The Bachelor. Thank you so much for having me. And as you might not know, I do produce a show about The Bachelor called Will You Accept This Rose?
Oh, Jesus Christ. Why don't you...
That's going to be
the show that you do for us for a living. Ethnically ambiguous.
And thank you so much, Anna.
Thank you.
Great. So just closing out, we wanted to talk about two more Trump stories. The big story is that Stormy Daniels is suing the president just to get out, like not for money, but just to get out of the agreement that his lawyer paid her to sign $130,000. And apparently he never countersigned. And so she is saying that she shouldn't be bound by that contract anymore. And that's what the suit is. There's also the fact that because, like, So his lawyer said that he just did this out of the goodness of his own heart, but now it's becoming clear that that's not the case, and therefore the payment violates campaign finance law. So that there's that tied up in this. So this could
none
end
of this
up being a bigger deal.
It's crazy. We're in a world now where, like, this actress, adult film star, is suing the president, and we're like, yeah, but sure, throw that on the pile of other things we have to deal with.
I know.
Right.
Yeah. It's exhausting.
And also, like, I think John Edwards got in trouble for something similar too, but he never did any time.
But those
campaign finance law violations, they don't really take seriously.
But, you know, yeah, as exhausting as this is, and as, like, maybe some people think it's a pretty rinky-dink thing, but he can be bought and sold. You know,
if he can be
leaned on by an adult film star, he can be leaned on by an oligarchy
or someone with a P
who he admires. Yeah.
Exactly. And Putin also said he loves him today. Did you hear that? He has some good quotes. He was like, I think he's great. He actually really impressed me in person. Mm. I was like, mm-hmm. I wonder why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Gary Cohn has resigned.
Yeah.
The White House brain drain continues.
Barely any adults in that room now.
Yeah.
Because he was like the one guy who just kind of was, you know, on the free market end of things and keeping all the protectionist urges at bay. But now he took off because of the impending tariffs that Trump is about to sign.
Which are not supported by anybody on his team.
No, not even Paul Ryan.
Paul Ryan's going out against it, yeah.
And even in his Paul Ryan way, which is like, I think we should reconsider that we do this surgically so there's no unintended, costs or, you know, consequences.
Does it not seem like every single major decision in this administration is made without knowing what happens on the other side?
Right.
Well, because
nothing, you don't know what's going to happen on the other side.
Right.
It's not like plotted out. It's not methodical or anything. It's just you don't know what's going to happen.
And some people speculate like it's a move because there's a big special election in Pennsylvania coming up and it's a steel state. So like he's trying to like whip that base up by saying like we're protecting like steel jobs. But history will show you that that isn't necessarily going to bring the jobs back. So we'll see.
Mm.
We shall see, because if not, it's a straight-up trade war, and the EU is ready, too. They're like, fucking try us.
Yeah.
And, you know, a pair of Levi's are going to be $7,000
for
people. Or like,
and then didn't, like, Finland already cancel putting a plant in Tennessee or something? Did you hear about this one? I don't know. Somebody in like, Scandinavia said, we had a $250 million contract to open up a factory in the south.
Right.
This happens. We don't put that there. We don't give you our money. We don't set up job. We don't give you jobs.
Hey, man, it's crazy when you have just someone with no impulse control just being able to say shit that has like crazy world changing effects.
And here's the thing. I mean, I think we knew this. We knew all this was going to happen. There's nothing new to this. It's exhausting and it's terrible. But this is now par for the course, and we knew it from way before he was president.
Yeah.
It seems like a consequence of not trusting experts at all and just trusting your gut, which seems to be how he makes decisions, and therefore he's surprised when, you know, the thing that the experts had been predicting all along comes to pass.
Again, going back to Facebook, he's a lonesome man who doesn't have love in his life.
Yeah,
someone just go visit him. You know?
Just be nice.
Visit me.
Just play catch with him.
Yeah.
Brendan, it's been a pleasure having you.
Thanks for having me. This has been fun. Yeah,
where can people find you, follow you?
Find me on
Facebook.
there is a Facebook page that I do not handle, and but I do support it to a degree, but I do not have to log on to Facebook, which is fantastic, and I don't have a personal account. You can find me on Twitter at _BrendanSmall. You can find me on Instagram at BrendanSmall, BrendonSmall. And I'd say go out and check out this video, this short film for Galacticon Nightmare. You can go to Funny or Die. You can go to Galacticon.com to find that. And check out the Galacticon comic book. It's really fun. We just released the penultimate issue today. So go to your local comic shop or go to Galacticon.com and check it out there.
Nice.
Awesome. Miles, where can people find you?
Oh, just on Twitter and Instagram.
Okay, cool. Anna, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Anna Hosniehe, AnnaHosniehe. You can listen to my podcast, Ethnically Ambiguous, on How Stuff Works. I just hate spelling my last name sometimes. Even I sometimes mess it up. yeah, Ethnically Ambiguous on How Stuff Works. We release the show every week and listen to Will You Accept This Rose for all your bachelor needs.
Can I say that Anna also produces The Baked Show with myself and Steve Agee and all those great musicians we talked about, and also a new show with myself and Brendan Walsh called Bren Tudun. We're both named Brendan. We have a show where basically, come and check this out. This is a ridiculous show where we're basically, it's kind of like Kathy Lee and Hoda, but we're both, we do makeovers, we do healthy snack making, we pull people out of the audience, and it's really like a style and food and social
critique.
It's a
lifestyle show.
It's a lifestyle show, and it's out of its fucking mind. And come see it at the Lyric Theater next month.
Let's just say we had to clean up a whole lot of cottage cheese after the last show.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very healthy alternative to regular cheese. So please come check that out.
Brent, for pizza.
It is. Oh, yeah. Forget about it. Then if you think that's disgusting, you're going to love our show.
Yeah, come check that out. The Lyric Hyperion in
First Tuesday of every month.
Lost what now? You can find me at Jack_O'Brien on Twitter. You can follow us at Daily Zeitgeist on Twitter. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page. You know how Facebook works. We have a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and
footnotes,
where we link off to the sources for the information that we talked about. That is going to do it for today. Miles, do you have a song you want to ride us out
Let's
on?
Just play a quick song from this band, Pivot. Called The Quick Mile. It's just a good vibey track. I think they're on Warp, you know. Shout out to all the whole Warp family out there.
All right, we will ride out on that, and we will be back tomorrow because it is a daily show. Talk to you guys then. We set the stars high.